Imagine standing beside Eleanor Roosevelt in 1938 Birmingham as she defiantly places her chair between segregated sections. Next to her stands Mary McLeod Bethune, born to former slaves yet risen to advise presidents and found the first Black woman established historically Black college. This isn't just a historical footnote. It's a moment that captures how one woman's determination quietly reshaped American democracy. Bethune's journey from cotton fields to corridors of power inspired Michelle Obama and guided Oprah Winfrey's educational vision in South Africa. Today, her statue stands in the U.S. Capitol, replacing a Confederate general's, a physical testament to America's capacity for transformation. Her story challenges us to examine what true democracy requires, not just laws on paper, but courage in practice. What does it mean when someone deemed unworthy of basic citizenship becomes commemorated in the nation's most hallowed halls? It means the American story continues to unfold, with each generation redefining who belongs at democracy's table. While earlier Black reformers focused on individual behavior, Bethune recognized that true liberation required transforming the institutions perpetuating inequality. This wasn't abstract philosophy, it was survival strategy. In early 1900s Florida, notorious for racial violence, Bethune faced down Ku Klux Klan threats to her Daytona school. She responded by organizing literacy classes to help people pass voting tests and pooling resources for poll taxes. She led Black women to vote for the first time, walking through intimidation with unwavering dignity. Bethune's brilliance lay in connecting racial equality to economic progress. She argued that the South's commitment to Black inferiority contradicted capitalism's principles and imposed massive economic costs. Her motto, "The true worth of a race must be measured by the character of its womanhood," guided organizations like her National Council of Negro Women. Her courage manifested in confronting hostile officials, articulating how segregation violated both moral and economic principles. By linking these concerns, she built crucial alliances with business leaders and politicians who might otherwise have ignored civil rights. When the Ku Klux Klan surrounded her Daytona school, Bethune responded not with fear, but calculated resistance. She organized students to sing spirituals while standing guard, meeting intimidation with dignified defiance. "Fear is the worst form of surrender," she told her students. "They want us frightened. Our serenity is our strength." The scene was powerful. White hooded figures with flaming torches encountered not terrified victims, but Black women and children standing in formation, voices raised in song. Hatred was met not with hatred, but with unshakable human dignity. Her approach to voter suppression demonstrated similar strategic brilliance. She established free literacy classes to overcome voting tests and organized community funds to cover poll taxes. When she led Black women to vote, each participant had been carefully prepared, trained in their rights, and in maintaining composure during harassment. They walked in formation, dressed impeccably, their presence a powerful statement of citizenship that defied stereotypes. Though not primarily remembered as a businesswoman, Bethune's economic ventures demonstrated her understanding that financial independence was crucial to lasting freedom. She knew political rights needed economic power to endure. Her investments were strategic and multifaceted. She backed the Pittsburgh Courier, a leading Black newspaper, recognizing that controlling narratives was as vital as controlling capital. Her stakes in Black-owned life insurance companies provided essential services to those excluded by white institutions while creating jobs and keeping wealth within Black communities. Her creation of Bethune Beach Resort late in life was particularly bold, establishing a recreational space for Black Americans during segregation. This wasn't just about leisure, it was about claiming space in a society that denied Black citizenship and humanity. The resort provided a rare refuge where families could relax without the constant burden of navigating racial discrimination, making rest itself an act of resistance. In her last will and testament, Bethune crafted more than a farewell. She created a philosophical framework for purposeful living, bequeathing principles instead of possessions. Her testament centers on 6 core inheritances: love, hope, racial dignity, confidence, faith, and responsibility. She presents love not as mere sentiment, but as a transformative force for healing society. Hope follows as she envisions a future where racial prejudices become relics of the past, maintaining optimism despite living through Jim Crow's brutality. Her bequest of racial dignity advocates a careful balance, maintaining self-respect without hatred, asserting equality without seeking dominance. "Your race has a rich heritage," she writes, encouraging cultural pride alongside constructive societal engagement. Central to her legacy is the emphasis on education as power. "I leave you a thirst for education," she declares, framing knowledge not as abstract learning, but as a practical necessity for survival and advancement in democracy. When Bethune arrived in Daytona in 1904 with $1.50, she faced a reality where less than half of Black children received formal education. Starting with a rented cottage, makeshift desks from packing crates, and homemade writing materials, she went door to door recruiting students, sharing how learning to read had opened up her world. Her educational approach was revolutionary in its holistic nature. Students learned traditional academics alongside practical skills and civic engagement. The curriculum reflected Bethune's understanding that survival in Jim Crow America required multiple forms of literacy, from reading books to navigating hostile social systems while maintaining dignity. Teaching Black girls they deserved education challenged society's limited view of their worth as domestic or agricultural laborers. "You are as good as anyone," she would tell them, directly contradicting Jim Crow ideology. Her approach merged practical skills with intellectual development, teaching students to grow food while studying literature and mathematics, equipping them with both survival skills and tools to challenge oppressive systems. As Bethune entered her 70s, she expanded her vision globally, connecting domestic racial struggles with international movements for decolonization and peace. At the 1945 United Nations Founding Conference, which she attended despite resistance from government officials and Black leaders, Bethune represented the National Council of Negro Women, insisting that Black women needed their own voice in shaping the post-war world order. Among diplomatic representatives gathering to create a framework for international cooperation, this daughter of former slaves declared that the problems of 13 million American Negroes are tied inextricably to the problems of colored people everywhere. She understood how European powers used similar justifications for subjugating Africans abroad and discriminating against Black Americans at home. Her global perspective created tensions with some Black male leaders who preferred focusing on domestic issues or questioned a woman representing Black interests internationally. Through her later work with the Moral Rearmament Movement, Bethune developed a balanced approach that addressed both systemic reform and personal transformation, distinguishing her vision from purely political or personal approaches to social change.